Time for Windows Weekly. Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley are here after our 4th of July hiatus. And boy, there's a lot to talk about. Microsoft kills TechNet, reorganizes everything. And yes, there's a new Nokia phone with 41 megapixels. Paul and Mary Jo were there yesterday. They'll have the report. It's all coming up next on Windows Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Windows Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley, episode 319, recorded July 12, 2013, Microsoft 3.0. Windows Weekly is brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create a professional website, blog, portfolio, or online store. For a free trial and 10% off your first purchase on new accounts, visit squarespace.com and use the offer code Windows7. And by Audible.com. To download the free audiobook of your choice, go to audible.com/windows. It's time for Windows Weekly, a show that talks about everything with Microsoft. And we've got a couple of Bostonians here, so we're going to do this all as a Whitey Bulger. Mr. Paul Thurrott from the Super Site for Windows, winsupersite.com, and a Penton Media analyst and the author of many, 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 uncountable books about many subjects. Everything
unaccountable.
Unaccountable. That's what your publishers keep saying. We can't account for the profits.
Right. Right. No, actually, those are very easy to count, Leo.
I hate you. Does Pearson publish your books?
Wiley.
No. Yeah. Pearson
did
mine.
You've heard of imaginary numbers, right?
Yeah. I get a statement from Pearson that the summary is zero.
So I get the same thing. Yeah.
Nothing. Yep. You got nada.
Eventually, they're just going to send me a bill. You know, that's what I'm thinking.
You owe us.
Yeah. Like, we have accounted for every single one of the books we ever published that you wrote, and you owe us $11.27.
Also with us, Mary Jo Foley of allaboutmicrosoft.com from ZDNet. She's smart enough to have stopped writing books.
One was enough.
One was plenty. I wish Paul and I had learned that lesson. Hey, it's great to have you. We're a little delayed today because yesterday you guys went to the Nokia launch of their new 41 megapixel camera phone.
We did.
So I don't know. Should we start with that, or should we start? Even the top story.
No, not the top.
You're already doing the Whitey Bulger thing, Leo. You just said, should we start with that?
Should we start with it?
Yeah, let's.
Don't start with me.
No, let's start with something else.
No, we want to start with something.
Now, people are calling it Microsoft 3.0.
Oh, that was me who called it that.
Yeah, but there have been more than three, haven't there, reorgs?
I think we should call it 3.1.
3.1.1.
Yeah, there we go. Well, there have been way more than three reorgs, but this kind of feels like the start of the 3.0 era to me at Microsoft.
Oh, that's because you had the book 2.0. That's why.
I wrote 2.0, but I'm not saying I want to write 3.0.
Oh, there you go.
I don't want to write Microsoft 3.0.
Sequel.
Yeah.
No.
Sequel opportunity.
Nope.
This, I tried to get up, but they keep pulling me in.
No,
not this.
Yeah,
time.
So I can give you the 2 second, two minute version of the reorg. Do you want me to?
Yes.
Give you a synopsis.
I read Steve Ballmer's letter and came away with it bereft.
Wait,
yeah,
you got
that
through
was
it
super
without
long
falling asleep?
And, yeah.
No, you know, it's quite entertaining because it was so full of nonsense phrases.
Okay, yeah. I was going to say, I've never heard anyone use that word to describe this.
It was entertaining because it was
entertaining. Sure,
you know, Patrick Norton used to do this thing where you put in words and you turn a crank, and business phrases would come out. You know, at the end of the day, you know, we're talking, and it was full of that stuff. I couldn't make heads or tail out of it. So please, Mary Jo, if you can do this in 3 minutes,
okay, or even less, maybe. Okay, so here's what happened. They took some of their veteran people. They took four of their engineering veterans. They took Terry Myerson, who was the head of Windows Phone Engineering. They made him head of a new operating system division. They took Julie Larson Green, who's currently the head of Windows Engineering, and made her head of hardware, including the Xbox. They took Satya Nadella, head of cloud and enterprise, and kept him in that role. And they took Chi Lu, who's currently the head of online services, and they made him the head of Bing, MSN, and all of the Office apps and Office 365. That's basically what happened. They took marketing and they took finance and they made them distributed organizations. Well, they're actually centralized, but their functions are going to be distributed. So that means Windows doesn't do its own marketing anymore. There's a central marketing group that does everything. There you go. That's the whole reorg.
Oh, well,
it is.
That was good. Nice job.
But let's get messy a little bit, shall we? Like, right. For example,
yeah, that's the high level.
Applications and services, the division that combines Bing, Office 365 and MSN, I think is what you said. Yeah. What that translates to me is no more losses for online services, right?
Yeah.
They just solve that problem.
Bury it.
Well, we don't know how the reporting structure is going to look in the new Microsoft, because some people are thinking they're going to report all products up as one thing, which I don't think they're going to do. But that's everyone's kind of guessing how.
I don't think they would have to pass some sort of review, wouldn't it? Scrutiny. I don't think they can just
change
it.
Yeah. But we don't know yet like how they're actually going to report. So maybe they're going to report online services mixed in with Office, or maybe they're going to do something else. We're not sure yet.
I would have to think they're going to do
that. I would think so.
So I'm just – so some of the takeaways. One, this is a big promotion for Julie Larson Green. She has almost really – meteoric is almost the word to describe her rise.
I don't know. You
know what's so funny? I know. I got so many people tweeting me yesterday. Was Julie Larson Green just demoted?
Demoted?
Yeah. So there is a case to be made for that. I would say I would put it as more of a lateral move.
Okay.
Because she just got bumped out of Windows.
Oh, she did?
She was previously in charge of Windows engineering.
Right.
What she is now in charge of is
Sadovsky's,
Surface.
Sadovsky's kind of mentee.
Yes.
And then when he departed, she, in a partnership with somebody else, picked up Windows 8.
Tammy Reller,
that's right. But prior to that, she'd been in Office, and she did the ribbon very famously.
Exactly.
And it sounds like now she's in a very high-level operational role.
And she is, but Windows is roughly... I don't know, 30% of their business or something.
That's true.
Surface is roughly 0.05% of their business. You know, now I mean, granted, Xbox falls under this organization as well. I read, I think it was Dean. I always get this guy's name wrong. Dean Hakatashi or something.
Akamovich.
This is the former Xbox guy who kind of writes about video gaming now. Said that Xbox.
Dean Takahashi.
Takahashi, thank you. Is now the Xbox organization is now run by a woman who knows nothing about video games, who's never played a video game. You know, which is kind of a little
scary. Do we know
that?
Is that true?
We don't know that for a fact, do we?
Oh, well, I mean,
she could go home and do Call of Duty every night. We don't know.
I know. She might have a special gamer tag you don't know, Paul, just like me.
I'm sorry. I shouldn't.
I suspect that's not the case.
Just because
I expect both of those.
Just because she's a woman does not mean she's not a gamer.
Whoa. I don't know. Okay, that's not what I was implying, but
well, I think that's what people are thinking was how could she be? She doesn't look like a gamer.
Okay. Well, she has certainly never run a video game business. Let's put it that way.
Oh, that so, no. She had, she so never she's running I mean that. She was running Windows. She'd never run an operating system business either.
That's the point of the demotion. So in other words, even Xbox, which a lot of people believe to be successful even though it never really has been, is a relatively small business, and certainly compared to Windows, is a very small business.
I have to think, though, that Microsoft thinks that devices are the future.
Right. That's why I don't think it was a demotion. People are so used to thinking of Windows as huge, right, and the big thing for Microsoft. But in the future, Microsoft, Windows isn't going to be as big as it is now. And devices is, and services are. Those are the two, like, key slots. So I wouldn't say she got promoted over everyone else. But I think she's at the same level as those four people who are running the business groups.
I don't know that devices are ever going to be 50% of Microsoft, you know, despite the phrase, software services, or devices and services.
They're a services company, I guess,
They are.
And I think implicit in the notion of devices is not just, in other words, it doesn't really mean Microsoft's devices. It means, our partners' devices, and by the way, also our competitors' devices, because we put our software and services on those devices.
Well, then that's important because she's in charge of really a big profit center. If you're saying she's responsible for OEM relationships.
She's not.
Oh, she's not.
No, she's not.
Oh, never mind.
Oh, yeah, and that's the one person I forgot to mention in the reorg who is kind of like this wild mystery card, right? It's Tony Bates, who used to run
Skype.
Skype.
Yeah.
That guy.
Are you sure that's his name?
It, I'm positive. Every time I say it's Paul's, like, his name's not Tony Bates. It is. It's Tony Bates.
It can't be Tony Bates.
You guys, what is that? A conflation of Psycho's Bates Motel and Tony Bates. Perkins? Is that what you're thinking? Does it bring up
every
some
time
sort
she says it, I'm like, that's not his name.
Tony Bates Motel?
Yeah. Tony Bates.
But now he
Tony,
came in Tony, with the Skype acquisition, right? He was he was running Skype.
He did, right. Yep. But now he's no longer running Skype. He is now the head of business strategy and evangelism at Microsoft. So, you know, this thing that used to be called DPE, Developer and Partner Evangelism Group, that goes under him. Mergers and acquisitions, I believe, goes under him. And OEM is also reporting up through him now, through a dotted line. So he's the guy who's kind of in charge of OEM now. Or not totally, but partially.
So he would qualify as new blood.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, Julie Larson's Green has been there 20 years.
Right.
I don't know about the other people. I imagine they're all long
lifers. Yeah, you know, by the way, so that's true. And a lot of these guys have been around at Microsoft for a long time. But honestly, when you look at the people who are running these the four engineering groups, which I think of as the core of the company.
Oh, yeah.
Julie Larson Green, Terry Myerson, is it Quilu?
Chilu.
Yep.
He's and, a newbie. Sacha they got him from Yahoo. He was in charge
of
searching.
Well, they're all relatively...
Yahoo.
Certainly, for operating at that level in the company, they're new. I mean, it's like they've shuffled the starting five of a basketball team, and they put some of the, you know, sixth player of the year type players or bench players up in very prominent roles all of a sudden. And so some of these people are amazing individuals, certainly. And this is actually a pretty profound change.
Yeah, I think the part I'm really interested how this works. To me, the biggest shakeup was Windows, right? So Windows Phone, Windows, and the Xbox operating system are all in one group now.
When you think of OS excellence at Microsoft, I think Windows Phone is the first thing that comes to mind. Mm-hmm. And
he's saying that seriously or not? I can't tell.
I'm just letting him say his thing.
That was kind of an interesting choice. So you know,
now, the important thing is that, and this is true, Tony Bates. Has experience with the relationship with NSA, and so he is going to be the NSA liaison. I think that that's really the most important job at Microsoft.
We'll talk about that later.
Yeah, there's a story, huh? So now I remember last year Julie Larson Green was at All Things D. She was talking, and they said, "Well, do you want to be the next CEO of Microsoft?" And she kind of said, "Talk
this
to me."
This was actually a couple of months ago.
She said, "Talk to me in a year." She didn't say no, which is the prudent thing to say. Oh, no, Mr. Ballmer's doing a wonderful job. She said, talk to me in a year. She's the next CEO?
She's not a dynamic public presence. I mean, what I've heard from people at Microsoft is that she's really smart and she really knows what she's doing and she has a clear vision for the future. And unfortunately, when she gets in front of a crowd of people, that doesn't always necessarily come right out.
We saw her. Didn't we see her at the speaking at one of the Windows things?
Yeah, she spoke at Build very briefly.
Did she present at Build? Yeah.
Very briefly. And okay. I think this might be part of it, that her appearance at the that Wired show that you were referring to, I think...
Wired, that was it, yeah.
I think they wanted to limit her time in front of people. You know, I don't mean to disparage her. I think, you know, standing in front of people and speaking is difficult. There's no doubt about it. And some people are really good at it and some people aren't. And
Bill Gates was not a great speaker.
No,
a better one.
He became better with lots of training.
He did.
But he never lost the kind of whiny tone to his voice. And
now, he was the founder, so he gets to do whatever he wants.
Right.
Sure.
Nevertheless, it's not unheard of. And somebody smart who knows what they're doing, and they say that Larson Green is very good at bringing teams together. Something Microsoft needs desperately, bringing teams together and having them work together. This is something maybe should be job one right now, Microsoft. And it looks like this reorg is about that, right? Yes.
And
definitely is. Like they, in all the memos and strategy documents about this, everybody was emphasizing the reason we're doing this is so that we can have products that have interdependencies work together, right?
Yes.
Have common stores, common code repositories, common UI. This is why this reorg makes a ton of sense. I see so many people today talking. You see all these people today saying they're copying Apple. I actually know for a fact there was a program at Microsoft called One Microsoft. It's existed for a year or more. It's not like this is some new brand new thing.
Apple's sudden change to supposedly to a kind of a function based organization came about because Scott Forstall refused to apologize for Apple Maps and was fired. Microsoft.
Don Mattrick apologized for Xbox and left.
He did. Yes.
Yeah, but he left of his own volition.
He went to a fine job as CEO of the sinking ship called Zynga.
Yeah. but he got a big paycheck too. So.
I'm sure he got a lot of money. I wonder if Mattrick would have had a role. Would he been in one of the three? I think he would have been, right?
There was a lot of scuttlebutt that I've heard, and I don't know if it's true or not, that it was Julie versus Don.
Yeah.
Don lost and Julie won and Don left.
That sounds right. I have no inside information, but that
me neither.
That sounds right.
Yeah. Sure.
Sounds plausible, maybe.
Plausible.
Is a better word.
I agree. But, you know, as far as, who's the next CEO and is Julie Larson Green it? I think we shouldn't forget about some of these other people who are in these jobs, right?
Satya
Nadella has, like, a lot of cred inside Microsoft right now because of all that he's done with Azure and the whole messaging around the cloud. So you can't just count him out. And Chi Lu... Also, you know, they see him as helping them transform Bing. Okay, online services has lost a ton of money, but Microsoft is starting to change the way they think about Bing. And they're making it a component almost more than it's a web search engine anymore. So he's also done a lot of interesting kind of behind the scenes things at Microsoft. So I don't think we should just say it's either going to be Julie Larson Green or it's, you know, or Tony Bates or whoever. We don't really know how this could shake out if and when. Well, not if and when, but
I actually
when
think this was Ballmer set up retired. Clearly to prevent the notion of this person is the, assumed successor. I think this structure is designed to prevent that.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. Because no one person really has a sentence.
But when Bill Gates ran Microsoft, Steve Ballmer was the obvious number two.
Right.
Right. For years and years. And under Steve Ballmer, before and after this reorg, I don't think we can point to a single person who was the obvious number two. Yep. In fact, the only one who was sort of obviously number two in some ways was Steven Sinofsky, and he left pretty quickly.
Nah. He was never the obvious one.
No, but it had that look to it, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of people thought so. I never
he
heard
was too
he
abrasive.
Was...
abrasive. There was
he,
no
He
way.
Was never really considered, I don't think.
Sure.
He wasn't a consensus builder.
So he wasn't.
But what's interesting, because Microsoft was led in its beginning by an engineer. Mm-hmm. It's been led in the last few years by a sales guy. Mm-hmm. And you get two different things. You know, it really changes the culture of a company. You look at the Steve Jobs to Tim Cook transition. Tim Cook's an operations guy. And what is Apple suddenly really good at? Operations.
They're pretty boring, aren't
and
they?
And boring in every other respect. Yeah, so... That's where the culture comes from.
Oddly enough, the person I would pick based on who we have available for the next CEO would be Nadella, and he is an engineer. There's no doubt about it.
As
and
is Larson Green.
Kind of a
she
is too.
And that's a return to that kind of historical past for Microsoft. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That said, though, you know, when you think about the Microsoft of Bill Gates, especially in the early days, it makes sense that it would be engineering driven. They made programming languages.
Yep.
They started into OSs sort of not because they wanted to, but because they had to. They did application software in an age when this stuff was very primitive and could be engineering driven.
Right.
You know, the way that technology is today is it's all about big budget entertainment and experiences. And, you know, those kind of skills don't necessarily translate. It's like you couldn't take Steve Wozniak and put him into Apple today and have him make a difference, because the skills that he had were very applicable to the world of the 1980s, not so applicable to the world of 2013.
That's 100%.
Right. And you know, yes, Microsoft's run by a salesman, but, you know, the world is different. I mean, and it makes sense that for Microsoft to continue to be successful, it has to evolve and grow and change. And I don't think we can go back to the Bill Gates style.
And to Bill's credit, he evolved as well and became really a deal maker, and much more of a deal maker than an engineer, a businessman more than anything.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. In fact, I think that was ultimately its greatest strength.
Secret skill. Yeah. Yep. His hidden power, superpower.
You know, one interesting thing on the successor commentary is, you know, a lot of people have been saying for years that Kevin Turner, who's the COO at Microsoft, was going to be the next CEO. But very tellingly, in this reorg, he lost quite a bit of power. Hmm. He lost central marketing that's now under Tammy Reller.
That's right.
He also lost some of the OEM reporting in to him capabilities. So, you know, I don't know if that's a signal that he's not the guy, but it kind of dampens down some of the rumors, at least, that he's definitely the next CEO.
Normally, it's the board really that's making these moves and decisions. It's not. I think people sometimes think, "Oh, Steve Ballmer's choosing, anointing his successor," and I don't know. You know Microsoft's organization better. Is it the board? Do they have a strong board that is choosing the leadership at this point, or is it a strong CEO that's choosing the leadership?
I think you have to remember who's the chairman of the board.
It's Mr. Bill Gates.
And Bill Gates.
It's run like the mafia,
shares.
Leo.
It's
the same organization.
The capo di capo is Bill.
Yeah. There's a lot of ring kissing, I think, is what I'm trying to say.
And did you see the article that Ford CEO Alan Mulally talked to Ballmer before this reorg? I'm sure Ballmer talked to a lot of people, and I know they've dealt with each other quite a bit.
Tell me what they talked about.
Well, Mulally, I mean, if he has a skill, he turned Ford around. Ford was being run into
I'm a big fan of this guy. That's why.
Yeah,
Ford
was being run into the ground by the family, and he was able. And when he came in, he really.
Well, give the family credit because it was the Ford guy who hired him and knew that he couldn't do the job. I mean, they recognized.
Yeah, but
the
it was Henry II who forced Lee Iacocca out and took the company on a downward slide for many years. And
that was a long time ago.
But Mulally turned their fortunes around and with a big reorg. So we don't know what they talked about, but I wouldn't be surprised if.
What if they talked about him coming to Microsoft?
Wait, can
He's
I?
He's an engineer. He's from Seattle. He was at Boeing for years.
I know a little bit about what we're talking about now. So I actually heard the rumor that supposedly Ballmer was patterning this reorg after what happened at Ford. So I asked around about that, and I hear not true. Okay. That it sounds like a great story, but Microsoft invites a lot of CEOs to come to the company, and they share best practices and all that. Yeah. Steve Ballmer wrote a foreword on his book for him. So I think people are making this out to be a little more than it was. It's like that Microsoft made this reorg themselves, and they might have taken inspiration here and there, but I wouldn't say that Alan Mulcahy, how do you pronounce
Mulally.
His last name? Mulally actually had any direct influence on how this reorg happened. Yeah. No.
Do you
Steve Ballmer's a Detroit guy too, right? He's a big fan of American cars and all this.
They're reputedly buddies. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm curious if this reorg is a shuffling of the deck chairs or if it's significant. What is this? I mean,
I think it's both, Leo.
I kind of do too, actually.
Really? Okay. Tell me about that.
I think it is the shuffling of the deck chairs in that nobody brand new came in, right? It's just taking the people they have and moving them into new roles. I think, though, it's significant in that they finally brought Windows Phone, Windows, and the Xbox operating system together, which is something they should have done a while ago.
Yes.
So I think that's very big. And also, I think it's going to be really interesting to see how central marketing works now. Like, Tammy Riller is in charge of central marketing. Are they going to have better ads finally? Because it's going to show all their products.
I love the term central marketing, by the way.
I know.
It's like the state-run newspaper.
We have a restaurant in Petaluma called Central Market. Every time you say that, my mouth waters.
Right. Does it have a hammer and a sickle on the wall?
No, it ought to, though.
It's got that kind of vibe, you know?
Yeah. So, I think it's a little of both.
Yeah, no, I do too. You know, like I said earlier, I think the big thing I just compare it to basketball. You know, you've got four, maybe five stars, and you've kind of benched them, and you've put these other guys in charge of the in the starting five, starting four in this case.
Yeah,
it's really interesting, and so sometimes that dynamic is very successful, and sometimes it isn't. For example, next year's Celtics team will be like that. But I guess we'll see. I'm really curious about this. And the other thing, Ballmer, it's not fair to say he stated very plainly that more changes are coming. I think as they settle into this new organization over the next 6 months or whatever, there might be some further shuffling around as they discover that, maybe this alignment didn't make a lot of sense, or maybe we need these people over here and so forth. But I think we're going to see some, not major changes like this, but some further fine tuning as we go forward.
Anything more to say about the reorg before we move on?
The only thing I wanted to add was that, he specifically called out four products, sort of products that were foundational, he said, to Microsoft's future. they're not that surprising, but it's mobile devices. So I find it interesting. He did put the devices thing right up there front and center. Windows, Office 365, and Windows Azure. And then he called out Xbox and Bing. I kind of think of them as second tier because they're not top tier, but that makes them sound terrible. But as key contributors for the future, you know. So I think between those six products, and especially the first four, that's how they see the core of their successes going forward, you know. So Office 365, not Office, right? Windows Azure, not Windows Server. Very online based. I mean, all of these things have an online component.
I have to say, I mean, from an outsider, far more outside even than you guys, that makes sense to me. That's the future of Microsoft. Is enterprise?
But dealing with IT people, especially, there's a real resistance to cloud computing and to devices too, for whatever that's worth. They sometimes react with this kind of shock and horror at this approach that they're taking, and think surely we will be scaling back from this. You know, that surely we will understand this is a. I know that. Yeah. But every time there's a story, and by the way, the NSA is obviously a big story, but it could be a small story. Like Gmail has an email outage, you know, an outage of Gmail. We'll get people in the comments who'll say, see, told you, cloud computing is baloney. That's why I carry around my USB key with all my stuff on it. It's all crashing down. We're going to come right back, you know.
Just makes people sound like Dvorak when they say that. I'm sorry.
Well, you know, people get stuck in a way of doing things. I get it. But Microsoft has been kind of talking in this direction, talking. Obviously, they're kind of walking now as well. But, you know, a big piece of this is going to be getting their customers not just to sort of begrudgingly join them on this kind of journey, but to accept it and even want it and understand the advantages of it.
You know, even for people like us who are not enterprises, it's the benefit of the cloud is becoming so apparent that think it's just an inevitability.
I think it's probably easier for individuals and small businesses to accept this stuff because we don't have the resources to make huge infrastructure.
Right. It's a huge benefit for us. That's right.
Yeah. It's the enterprises who have already, you know, they have the resources, have spent the time and commitment and money on developing this stuff and have huge groups of employees that manage all this stuff for them.
And those guys are going kicking and screaming. I wouldn't expect them to not be unhappy about it, but... When an enterprise sees how much they can save and how much everything works better.
Well, the fundamental thing, I think a lot of companies kind of forget, you know, when it comes to IT, like what the point is of the company, right? We didn't set out to be an email provider.
Right.
But now we as some huge organization have like 33,000 mailboxes. Right. It's like, how did we become an exchange shop?
Exactly.
Part of it is just scaling back from that mentality. It takes a while.
Yeah. Oh, of course, and people will go kicking and screaming, as with any big transition. I mean, I think from Microsoft's point of view, it's very clear. This is a very forward-looking reorg. This is all about the future of Microsoft and figuring out what that future is and making the changes that need to be made to move toward that future, even if it isn't immediately, here. Their challenge, big challenge, innovator's dilemma, not to cannibalize their existing business.
Sure.
Their desktop business while moving to new world.
They also have a unique problem, or they did. We'll see how this changes in that, you know, Microsoft is such a huge and diverse company that we come back to that old org chart joke with the guns pointing at each other. You know, it's kind of a weird thing when you have all these different parts of the company that in other parts of the world might be other companies, really, because they're so different. They all have their own goals. They all had their own marketing. They all had their own projects and the things they were working on. Sometimes they kind of stepped on each other and, you know, getting these guys to kind of all work together, I'm amazed that they have no plans for further layoffs, for example.
They did this with that one layoff, right?
Yeah, let's see. Well, let's see what happens, though.
Well, so far, I mean, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Microsoft is a little top-heavy, from what I can tell.
They said, even though they announced this yesterday, some people may start immediately transitioning into their new roles, but the actual reorg is not going to take effect for months, probably, right? I mean, they don't want to disrupt everybody. They're in the middle of trying to ship Windows 8.1 you know, finish up a bunch of products. So it's going to be gradual, and then we'll see, are there going to be layoffs or other...
It's not a game of Jenga. They're not pulling out stuff at the bottom and putting... I mean, this is the top. This is the top part. Who reports to whom? Who's responsible for this? Yeah. Not the engineers are going to still be beavering away, and one presumes.
Hopefully.
Yeah, it depends on what they're working on. But yes.
Building that dam. To me, it's fascinating because, you know, this is all new for me, starting a business and running a small business. We have 25 employees. Mm-hmm. And the idea, the notion of having, you know, tens of thousands of employees and massive structure and just saying, okay, pull all the plugs out of the patch bay, let's reassign everything, just blows my mind.
Right.
Amazing.
I've got a computer with 5 wires coming out of it. Yeah. I can't even get to start up.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know.
Yeah. Without, you know, slowing the business down, without changing anything, still pushing the widgets out the door. Very, very impressive. And I think a smart thing to do. It's probably very easy, and this, a lot of credit to Microsoft. It'd be very easy to just kind of sit on their laurels. They're making plenty of money. Mm-hmm. Just say, let's, you know, we're full speed ahead. And with Windows 8 and now with this, they're really thinking about the future and where they're going to be in 10 years. And I think that's what you have to do if you want to be around in 10 years.
Agree. Yeah.
All right, we're going to take a break. Just a quick note. Earlier today, a word came out that the founder of Bose, Amar Bose, Dr. Bose, passed away at the age of 83. He was a legend, taught at MIT for 45 years, and was actually on the faculty of the Electrical Engineering Department when he said there's got to be a way to make better speakers and created the Bose Corporation, a good Boston corporation. And he ran it right to the very end. You know, he was very involved with all of Bose product launches and all of that. So Amar Bose passed away at the age of 83. That's sad, but he had a very productive, very successful life. Really an amazing story. A legend in many ways. Let us talk about Squarespace.com. Then we'll get back with more. Paul Thurrott, Mary Jo Foley. Windows is the topic. Xbox, all that stuff too. But first, a word about making your first website or your next website, I should say. Many of you are veterans, have worked with all the hosting companies and so forth, know the ins and outs, the ups and downs, the pros and cons of many of them. I'd love you to think about a new one, a relatively new one. You've heard us talk about it before, Squarespace.com. Great hosting. And I don't think they get enough credit as a hosting company because that is their business. But because they put on top of it the best content management system, the software, and it's tightly integrated into the hosting, I think people don't, you know, think of them as a hosting company. Let me tell you, this is the best hosting company in the world. Really is for your next website. And on top of it, the best content management system. Visit Squarespace.com. They've got a really great strategy. They say, you know what? Come. You don't have to give us a credit card or any personal information. Just get started. Create a Squarespace site free for 2 weeks. Import your existing content, including comments, images. All the SEO stays the same. See what it would look like. Play with our templates. They have, you know, as many people on the design team as the engineering team. And that's why you have all these beautiful designs. But they've done it right. Here's the new Momentum design as an example. Perfect. It's a full bleed design. That means the picture goes all the way to the edge. But perfect for a photographer, a designer, an artist who wants to really highlight the products. But then this is the beauty part. It's mobile responsive. Everything they do is. So it doesn't, it's, there's not a separate mobile site. Your site looks great at any size screen. And it's also really easy to configure. You don't have to be a programmer. And if you would visit Squarespace, pick a template you like the look of, and then look at all the different sites created with it. And you'll be blown away. These sites all look unique because Squarespace gives you the tools to make it look that way. I am a big fan at Squarespace.com. I want you to try it right now. Go there. Click the try it free button. You got 2 weeks to use all the tools, all the doohickeys. Workshops, they do webinars all the time to help you be better. If you're a developer, by the way, they do have an excellent developer platform with syntax, coding, and coloring and all of that stuff. Once you get to Squarespace.com, you've tried it out, look at the pricing. You will be kind of blown away. This is very affordable. Not by any means, you know, the budget what you'd expect from a budget host, but you can start as low as $8 a month. Most people pick the $16 a month plan. That's if you buy an annual contract, $20 month to month. That gives you kind of an unheard of unlimited pages, unlimited galleries, unlimited blogs, unlimited bandwidth. You can get very popular. Not only will your site never go down, you'll never get a bandwidth bill. That's it. $16 a month, that's it. Unlimited storage, unlimited contributors. Of course, all their designs are mobile responsive, so you kind of get the automatic mobile website. If you sign up for a year plan, they'll give you the domain name for free, hook it all up for you, .com.org.net.mobi.biz.info. They have all of those. Great support. If you want to sell stuff, $24 a month for their e-commerce platform. It is really good, really robust, with unlimited physical and digital products. Squarespace never takes a cut. Just $24 a month. You get a mobile store, of course, inventory tracking built in real time. You get automatic tax calculations, shipping calculations, coupon controls, and all the rest. Try it right now. 2 weeks free, squarespace.com. If you do decide to buy, I ask you one little favor. Just use the offer code Windows7, Windows and the number 7, because we're in the month of July. You'll get 10% off your new account, monthly or annual, 10% off on your new account, and you'll get the best hosting and best software ever. Squarespace.com. The place to go to start your new site. Leo Laporte, we're talking about Windows, Windows Weekly. Paul Theroux here, Mary Jo Foley. And moving on to topic number two, the show that you were at, Mary Jo, the Worldwide Partner Show in Houston. Yeah.
Yes, just got back from Houston. It's always a great show, too. And I'm always surprised more journalists don't go. I shouldn't say that because then I'll tip them off to go. But
next Paul will want to go.
Yeah. Okay, so this year there were 15,000 Microsoft partners at this thing. So these are like their reseller partners, their Salesforce, their LARS, you know, which are their large account resellers, their VARs, their systems integrators. These are the people who totally know what's going on with Microsoft. They're all in one giant convention center, which is pretty awesome. And the other cool thing that happens at the partner show is Microsoft always shows these roadmaps because they have to tell these people what they're doing, right? They're expecting them to go out and sell their products. So they have to actually tell them something. There were a couple of good moments of roadmap love at the partner show. Kevin Turner, the COO, showed the slide. I sent you guys a link to it, the biggest innovation year ever at Microsoft, where he showed this giant slide on the screen that had all the things that are coming with Surface and Skype and Windows Phone and Office in fiscal 14, which starts on July 1st, just recently started. And so there's a whole bunch of things on that slide. He didn't really get into specifics, but he said things like, you know, there are going to be new Surface accessories and new colors of Surface accessories. He said there's going to be updates to Surface RT and Surface Pro. He talked about the Office Windows Store apps, which are the Gemini apps. So they talked about a lot of these things that are coming in the next 12 months. Again, some of these we knew, like we know Windows 8.1 and we know about Xbox One and the new Kinect. We knew a lot of these, but there were little hints buried in these slides that Kevin Turner showed of kind of what their priorities are for the coming year and what the marching orders are for the partners. So that's very telling if you want to know what Microsoft's doing in the next 12 months. And what else? I got to meet in person Dr. Pizza and Mrs. Pizza at the show. Melissa Bright Bright.
You never met it. Is it possible you had never met?
Never met them.
Peter Bright before?
I had met Dr. Pizza before, but I had never met his wife.
Who is unaccountably lovely.
She is lovely.
I don't understand it.
No, they came. We had a tweet up, and they came to our tweet up, so that was great. And there were just like a lot of good meetings. I actually spoke at the partner conference. I did a session on the Microsoft top tech trends, which was a sellout session, so that was good.
Good for you.
Yeah, that's yeah. Great. So it's a very good conference, and it gives you a lot of sense of what Microsoft wants its partners to do. And the big takeaways were: we want you to sell the cloud. We want you to sell subscriptions and get people to renew their enterprise agreements. And we want you to make sure that you really push the Surface and to try to get them to do that because they know a lot of their own partners aren't even using the Surface yet. They had the Surface discount giveaway and there were huge lines in the convention center, like 2-hour plus lines for people to get those deals on the Surface RT and the Surface Pro that they've been doing at other shows. There was actually a sign that said, if you're in the line at this point, you have 2 more hours to wait.
Oh, my God.
I took a picture of that.
That's worse than going to Chairman Mao's tomb.
It is. Yeah.
And you don't get a free computer at the end of it either.
You know. You don't. And one of the sessions I was in, they gave everybody in the session a Windows phone. Like they just at the end. And everybody in here gets a Windows
phone. Which one?
And they just handed them out. They gave out Lumia 620 and 720s to everybody there.
There you go.
Again, because they know if the partners aren't using their products, they can't recommend them to customers, right? So
it was a smart idea. Would have been nicer, but okay.
I know. It would have been. Yep. Yeah. So that was the partner show. Lots of
Sounds
interesting
good.
Little tidbits and updates.
That's good.
Yep.
Windows 8.1. So, Paul, you guys both, have you, Mary Jo, did you install 8.1?
Yeah. Okay. I've been using it on the Acer Iconia W3 that they gave us to use at Build.
Perfect. Mm-hmm. And Paul, of course, has had it for a while. The Iconia is cheap, right? That's a really inexpensive.
The machine is awful.
Too bad.
But the OS is good.
You like 8.1?
I do.
What do you like?
This is going to sound crazy that this makes such a big difference, but I like that you can change the wallpaper in the desktop and
huge difference.
The Metro side to be the same. It makes a huge difference.
It's funny because it's very psychological, but if you when you hit that start button, it's not so disorienting if your desktop doesn't change. Yeah. Then it feels more like a menu, and you haven't left the desktop quite so much.
The way they describe it was that the start screen opens on top of your desktop.
Yeah.
I thought to myself,
that's
not really happening.
No.
You know, you don't see the icons or whatever. But, you know, the truth is, visually, it has that effect.
Yeah.
It seems like that. It's a very seamless transition as opposed to that infamously jarring transition, which was the...
One wouldn't think that made such a difference, but it does.
It does. It makes a huge difference.
And I think that's why this is a much bigger release than people understand, because it's these little things kind of add up, and instead of a constantly escalating series of grumblings about what's wrong with it, you just kind of say, yeah, good. Okay, here we go.
That's better. That's better.
Yeah.
I'm happy the start button's back. I know that's controversial, but I think it's a positive.
Well, and if you set the start button not to show the Metro tiles, but the little tiles, the app list, and then you set your desktop wallpaper and your start screen wallpaper the same, it kind of feels like a start menu.
It does.
It's not bad.
It's not bad.
Yeah.
It's just, it's great for people who, like, they're really trying to go after all the people still running Windows XP and say to them, look, come on, we want you to go to Windows 8.
But that's on that slide, right? No, kill XP, dead.
I know. So, but if you show them Windows 8 and they get over in the desktop and then they're like, okay, I'm in the desktop. Now, how do I get out of here? Right? There's no visual cue.
It's so weird being Microsoft. I can't even count anymore the number of times they've had to have a campaign to kill some previously unbelievably successful product.
Ken Turner's slide, XP eradication.
Yes, that is mission number one almost for them this year. You know why? There's still 39% or 37% of all Windows desktops running XP in the market.
Which, by the way, means over 400 million PCs.
That's amazing.
Yep.
It is unbelievable.
And that's a measure of success, where you're so good that your 10-year-old operating system is still on hundreds of millions of computers.
It's crazy.
It's amazing.
Yep. Yep.
Amazing.
Yep. Yeah, so I like that. What else do I like?
You know, when that happens to Google with Android, people go, oh, see, there's the problem with Android.
I know.
Fragmentation.
Yeah. We got fragmentation. When it happens with Windows, it's like, wow, people like Windows.
Yeah.
They don't want to give it up.
Well, the problem, of course, is that the end of support for Windows XP is April 8th, 2014, which I don't think a lot of people still realize is Microsoft's not going to patch this anymore, even
they're
with security
denial.
Patches. Yeah. And there's no, like people are saying, oh, yeah, they're going to do an extension and there's going to be another extension of end of life. Nope, there's not.
You're sure?
So if you're on
that.
XP, no more security patches as of April 8th.
And while XP is, you know, robust and has been patched so many times now that it probably is pretty darn secure, I would imagine bad guys look at this 40% number and go, okay, Okay.
Yeah. They can't wait.
Let's take a look. Let's see if we can find some more stuff.
The technical term is low-hanging fruit.
Low-hanging fruit. If somebody's not updating after April.
This is what we, exactly. We want someone running really old technology that refuses to, Windows XP.
And those are the machines that are probably sitting in a closet somewhere running, you know, some Fatkaka, you know, remote access thing.
Sure.
And great. Let's go for it. Let's see if we can get into it.
Yeah. Yeah, they made it really clear, a partner. Like, they said point blank, excuse me, no extension on end of life.
No.
I keep seeing people say this in print and on sites saying, oh, yeah, don't worry. They can't do it. There's still 40% of people running it. They're going to drop it on April 8th. That's it.
I mean, they've pushed this as far as they can push it, far as I'm concerned. It's amazing they've gone this far with it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So what else, Paul? What do you like about Windows 8.1?
I like everything about Windows 8.1, Mary Jo.
Wow, do you?
It's nice. The new flavor of the month.
I was mostly okay with Windows 8. So I think everything you said, absolutely correct, and I agree with. I think they've done a nice job on both ends of the spectrum, and I think that's the big deal with this release, because they've made very nice concessions to desktop users where you can really configure this thing almost completely without Metro. On the flip side, if you do buy a new machine like that little Acer we were talking about or whatever coming down the line, and you want to really use the touch system and stay in the Metro environment and not see the desktop, they've also done a really good job of it removes the need to go into the desktop to do very common tasks. So a lot of the things you used to have to do around configuring system settings or file system access or SkyDrive access, that kind of stuff, all of that now happens through, it can happen through Metro. And I think that's a big deal too. And so they've really kind of taken stock of both audiences and said, how can we make this better for everybody? And I think they've done a nice job of hitting a balance with it. So, you know, SkyDrive built in is obviously a big deal. The built-in Bing integration that's part of Search, which sounds hokey until you see it, is fairly amazing.
I'm worried about, aren't we getting ads in our search, though, Bing ads in our search now?
Yeah, I heard about that. So I my understanding, I haven't looked into this yet. I read someone had said that. But yeah, I mean, so you're getting web search results in there by default. You can actually turn that off if you want
okay.
I suppose. But, you know, the point of this system, which I think is, I don't want to call it profound, but it is a kind of a big deal, is that you're just looking for something, you know, and that this thing can supply those answers, whatever that thing is. Supply answers across your file system, your different media types, the local system, if it's apps or whatever settings, and then web results, of course, and in integration within the search results. And so if you do a search like the classic examples are places like Paris or people like, you know, President Obama or something, where there are going to be links within those very rich search hero pages that they have that will bring you into other Metro apps, and that these things are extensible. And so, for example, I'd just make one up completely, but maybe Google, if Google were ever to write like a Google Maps app, you could see locations from the search results from that app instead of, say, from Bing Maps, mm-hmm. As it is now. So I think these kind of deep platform changes are also very exciting. It's neat to see this stuff because those kind of updates are things we wouldn't have seen until, you know, Windows 9 in the past, right? It would have been the next version. And now we get to see them just a year later.
Windows Store updates automatically happening, too. That is big.
Yep.
For a lot of people, like Stevie Mac Jr. just said, you know, on Twitter.
Yep. You know what I figured out sort of later after the fact is for me, because of what I do for a living, it's actually fairly crucial that I know when the built-in apps in particular are updated. I may actually have to turn that off.
Oh,
because
wow.
If they silently update in the background,
you'll never
I won't know. Know if it happens.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's kind of a weird thing, but I do agree that that's huge. I hate having to manually okay those.
We actually have the same issue on iPad today because iOS 7 is going to these automatic updates.
Right.
And on Android, where it may be updated 5 times and you had no idea. And we can't talk. We need to turn it off because we want to talk about, you know, there's a new update. So
I suppose
this is an issue.
Yeah, I mean, Android does have a notification system where those things might appear. I don't know how they'll do it on iOS, but there is nothing like that in Windows. And so, for all I know, apps have been updated already. I have no idea.
Right.
And I don't know where I would go to look. So
it's just
it is a weird
issue. Enterprise would have this issue.
Yeah.
And Enterprise will turn off auto updates, right? They're not.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, so what is the date? When are we getting? August?
Oh, yeah. Yep. So they said at the partner conference that they're going to have it to have the final version to OEM partners by the end of August, which pretty much means they're going to RTM around the end of August.
Good.
Right.
And the big question to me is, okay, once it RTMs, are they going to automatically give it to us who have Windows 8, or are they going to make us wait for some artificial launch event again?
Well, that's a good point, because RTM means final bits. They're pushing it through the store anyway. They could
What's
do it.
What's the manufacturing process here exactly?
Yeah,
I'm curious.
There's no CDs.
Right.
Ready to manufacture.
Yeah. Well, I guess PC makers obviously. Well, they must not. It's not like they used it. You know, we used to burn discs for these guys and run them over in a truck. Like, here you go, HP. Or actually, it would have been like Compaq or Pacadell or something. Like, here you go. No, here's your disc. Oh, there's no scratches on it. You know, your master copy of Windows.
No physical copies.
I think these days they used, or pretty recently, they used to have the OEMs come over for like a party and say, here's your disc. Here's
your
disc.
Oh, wow. Yeah. That'd be fun.
I don't know if they still do that.
Could be a big like OEM a little,
like,
party.
Unicorn pinata that they could, pinata they could hit with a stick.
Look, inside. It's updates.
It's USB keys.
Those are the days. Was it a golden disc? They called it the Gold Master.
It was literally called the Golden Master.
Yeah.
Yep.
I don't even know what's going on in court. Apple loses in court. Apple wins in court. Apple wants Motorola to stop bringing in phones. It's just crazy, these court trials. So what's the your headline is Apple loses twice.
Oh, that's where that's a little bit ahead, but I will go to that.
Did I jump too far? Oh, I'm sorry. Whoa. Sorry, I scrolled. We'll save that for later.
Apple.
Let's continue to talk about Windows PC market. See, I just didn't want to do this story.
Yeah, no one does.
PC market in decline again. The worst drop in the history of computing.
Well, the worst drop in growth, I guess.
It's a drop in growth.
Well, no, I'm sorry. It actually
is a drop in sales.
It's a drop in sales. Yeah.
Yeah. It ain't growing, Paul. It's shrinking.
Yeah. It's like a bell curve, and we're on the other side of the bell. You know, kind of. And it's going to be hard to hold on when you get to the end of that.
It's like a roller coaster.
Well, we'll see how far it falls, I guess. Yeah.
Fifth consecutive month of decline. HP no longer number one worldwide. Apple ready to fall out of third place in the U.S. to Lenovo.
Yeah, Lenovo just unseated HP as the number one PC maker worldwide, which we expected, although it was very close, and so that, I guess anything could happen there. The interesting thing is that Lenovo has kind of exploded in the U.S. in a good way.
Yeah.
And was actually pretty close to Apple, and that something could happen there as well, although, you know, Apple obviously has their own little product schedule, so they could experience a comeback later in the year, depending on how they do things, but very interesting. So, yeah, probably over the weekend I'll write up something about, you know, I usually combine the IDC and Gartner data. This information here is just from Gartner, but I guess no matter how you look at it, it's not very pretty.
Not pretty at all. What is the, what do you attribute this?
Well, oddly enough, so Gartner actually specifically said this has nothing to do with Windows 8.
Oh, wow. They did?
Yeah, I was. They were very emphatic about it. In fact, I'm not so sure I agree with that completely. But they just attributed it to the ongoing transition of users to simpler computing devices like tablets and smartphones. And that, you know, it's kind of a weird deal. But PCs, some people still need PCs for specific tasks. You know, document creation and spreadsheets and things are what, you know, perhaps. But they don't use that kind of stuff very often, and PCs last for a long time. So. So especially when you're not using it very often.
Right.
And so, yeah, it's like, you know, it's kind of reached a point where, you know, people, when they go sit on the couch and watch TV or, you know, whatever, they want to bring around this little portable device, not a big PC or not even a laptop necessarily. And so I think there's going to be a leveling off of this. And I think that we're going to settle into a kind of a lower place than we did hit at the height of the market, say 2 years ago, whenever that was. But yeah, I mean, for now, we literally are on the other the scary part of the roller coaster, as we call it. So we'll see when it stops.
Who'd have thunk it?
Well, certainly people were predicting it.
And Microsoft knew this too, right? Like, this isn't some big surprise to them either. That this is why they did Windows 8 the way they did it, right? They knew the market is transitioning to tablets. So
The people who are complaining about Windows 8 are the PC holdout guys who are like, no, I still want to use this kind of machine. What are you doing?
Right.
And certainly there are millions of those people. There's no doubt about it.
Yep.
It still doesn't feel right.
What's wrong with it?
I don't think a tablet replaces a laptop.
It depends.
Yeah,
what about Surface Pro? Some people are using them as their laptops.
And by the way, those are not counted in the PC shipments, right? Even though one could argue that's a PC.
Gartner...
Are they including Surface? Oh, okay.
Yeah. They didn't say Surface specifically, but they said x86 tablets.
Okay. So that's a PC. Mm-hmm. RT is not a PC.
Right.
iPad, stuff like that. Yeah. And still declining.
Well, I don't think any of the first generation, new Windows 8 type tablets have seized or taken anything by storm, right? None of these are particularly great. None of them are super sale spectacular. Everyone wants one.
Do you think
one.
They will in time?
The way I think of it is that these kinds of devices will settle into the laptop space. That these are simply the future of the laptop. People right now, not by people, I mean PC
by
makers.
People,
are kind
I
of
mean humans. Okay.
I mean, yeah. They think they're people, Leo.
The PC manufacturers are not people.
PC makers are experimenting with form factors, these transforming devices and all that. And I think that stuff will settle down eventually. Yeah. But
when XP dies in April, will you think there'll be this big rush?
They think. I don't know. I'm not sure how that's going to translate, but that they're encouraging partners, especially saying, hey, if you get people off XP, they're going to go buy new machines preloaded with Windows 8, hopefully, or at least Windows 7. So maybe that'll be an uptick in the market. I don't know. I don't know if I buy that. Because a lot of the people who are running XP, I think, may end up keeping their old hardware. Or trying to, at least,
Well, a lot of the people who are running XP are, in fact, running it on newer hardware. Windows 7 class hardware. Yeah, absolutely. Huh. A lot of these people have, a lot of them aren't. I mean, of course, but a lot of people, I keep calling them people. These people are not people. They're companies in this case. We're installing XP on there for a reason, right? Even though they might have had to have been buying newer hardware. So I don't know what they're going to, the issue isn't so much the hardware. It's the compatibility with whatever things they're still running. They're not people. Let's be very clear about that.
You don't want to call them users. Are you trying
no
to
one
show
that, no one that uses
OEMs. He's talking about. OEMs.
I don't mean XP users. I mean the
companies that make
the corporation. Yeah. Those people, they're probably people.
I just don't think that somebody's going to buy a tablet instead of a PC. But I guess they are.
I guess do. Right.
So think about this simple act of commuting. Right. You could get there in a truck, you could get there in a car, you could get there on a motorcycle or bicycle or whatever. It depends on your needs and all that. Yeah. But these things are not all necessarily directly competitive, but they all get you to a
You're
place.
Gonna pick one, probably.
Some people can get by with a smartphone. I mean, that's all they need.
Right.
God bless those people. Some people can use a tablet and a smartphone, Some people need a laptop. I happen to be one of those people. The mix is going to be very heavily centered on that middle of the market, which is going to be tablets and smartphones.
Something doesn't feel right.
I hear you, but you can drive to work in a Corolla. You can't necessarily carry dirt to work in a Corolla. Right. So you may need a truck for that occasionally. But
I guess what it means is there were a lot of people buying computers who really shouldn't have bought computers.
Well, they didn't have any other choices.
And
right?
They're so much happier now with this much more limited device, like an iPad.
The form has changed, but 5 years ago, whenever it was, when netbooks first arrived, we already started this transition. People started augmenting their desktop computer or maybe a big laptop computer with a netbook because they were super inexpensive. They were more portable. They tended to get really good battery life. They were underpowered. I mean, it sounds like I'm describing a tablet. And so they could sit on the couch and they could use this little netbook or whatever. Today, a tablet, you know, is better for that kind of thing. And I think there's a, I think there's a market for it. Plus, there's secondary devices, you know. somebody in the comments has got a Corolla. Of course, I had to use Corolla.
Eric says, you'd be amazed how much crap I've hauled in my Corolla.
All right, but you wouldn't do it in a Hyundai Elantra. That's my point. The point is,
the reason I put up the chat room is because there is some concurrence that there are a lot of people who said, yeah, you know, the family bought a PC because that's what you could buy. But now they're much happier with tablets or, you know.
The PC still sits there. And every once in a while, maybe for some reason, you have to use it for something. I got to print something. Mm-hmm. That's what the computer's for, you know.
Oh, I mean, I certainly saw this transition from desktop to laptop.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That didn't bother me. That was just about, I still think.
Well, by the way, eventually this stuff gets weird, right? So, you know, when you talk about something like Google Glass, where someone is sort of with you, but they're not really with you.
Yeah.
And, you know, you can get to some weird area where the thing you end up with is not the thing you started with. And I think that's the heart of this uncomfortable nature, because a laptop's a computer.
Something's going on.
Tablet is sort of a computer.
A smartphone's a computer.
Yeah.
I mean, I mean, if I look at the number of hours of screen time, it certainly is by far the vast majority is on a phone.
On a phone.
Smartphone. I do a lot of the things I used to do on a computer on the smartphone, except for writing, obviously.
Yeah, it's good for going through email.
Checking email. You know? I guess because a lot of my computing time is now social.
Used to spend a lot of time organizing like a calendar on a computer. The truth is, I never, ever need to look at my calendar on my computer.
Right.
Ever.
Right.
Yeah.
Never.
It's there, but I don't need it because it's on here.
Setting up like calendar alerts on a computer would just be pointless.
Right.
Because the phone's always here.
The phone's always with me.
Yeah. In fact, I've got like 11 phones that tell me every single time something stupid happens. I've got they're all
me too.
Away.
Me too. It's like a clockmaker's shop at noon.
Literally, it's like a like the Mormon Tabernacle Choir of phones.
Ding, dong, ding. Like. And do you do like I do? Every phone has a different sound.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
So that way, I spend a lot of time.
It's crazy because, by the way, sometimes they don't light up. So I'm sitting here, and a phone over there will go.
You have no idea which one.
And I look, and I can't tell which one it is.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That's good stuff.
But that's an unusual problem. But because we're unusual people.
It is an unusual
problem. But I think normal people probably do a lot. Yeah, I mean, but it doesn't obviate the need for a computer. So I guess the idea is, look, the computer I bought 5 years ago is fine, given how little I use it. I'm not going to buy a new one. But there will continue to be a market as these computers wear out or people decide to upgrade. No?
Yeah. There's got to be, right? At some point.
It feels weird to me. I'm just hoping it's like not a...
Yeah, my computer just died. I may need to buy a new computer.
Yeah, what happened to your... So was that Windows 8.1 that did that to you? What happened there?
No, this has been an intermittent issue for a few months.
It's been dying.
Maybe.
How old is it?
It's like a year old.
So yeah.
I'm going to need to figure this one out.
Well, that's what the industry needs to figure out. How to make computers die more rapidly.
Right. So I think HP figured it out. That's what I'm using. So
oh, they figured it out. All right.
Probably just buy another HP.
Yeah, why not?
Yeah.
Built
yeah,
it's here.
It's tough to buy right now, though, because we know all these Windows 8.1 devices are supposedly coming.
Well, for a desktop.
Will they be different? Will they just in the way... Or they're just going to be Windows 8 devices with 8.1
More touch-enabled, right?
Yep.
Laptops and desktops all in ones, probably. Hopefully some new form factors.
I don't know. We've gotten pretty crazy with the form factors as it is.
You know what I want? I want a Surface PC. That's what I want.
Well, good news. You can get an RT. Now, is this a rumor? It's a rumor. It's not true.
It's a rumor about the cuts.
$150 cut in the price of a Surface RT.
Supposedly happening. I believe
next week at Staples, right? It's in somebody's... The catalog was leaked.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
Is this Microsoft clearing out the old stock so they can introduce new stock?
Yeah.
Pretty clearly.
Hopefully. Yeah. So the prudent person might want to wait and see.
Yep. Unless you want a really cheap RT and you're okay. Because, you know, when you put 8.1 on your RT, it's not that bad now.
It's okay.
I don't know if Paul would agree. But I actually always liked my RT. I shouldn't say it that way, but
yeah.
I know. Maybe a breeze, new life.
Okay. What would be new in a next gen Surface RT? Newer
Maybe
processor,
a new chipset. Yep.
Are we looking, what are we looking at? Adam?
Qualcomm. A new Qualcomm chipset, supposedly.
A new ARM
right?
chipset. Yeah, yeah. Of course, it's ARM. Yeah.
Yep.
Right. And obviously Haswell on the pro side. I've never heard that Microsoft's going to do like a Bay Trail Surface in the middle, but maybe that wouldn't be a bad option for a mini. Surface Mini.
Mm. Mini Surface, you complete me.
It's like a Surface, but mini.
Minier. Finally, can we talk about the Nokia things? First, let's talk about the Windows 8 phone feature pack.
Let's talk about Nokia.
The awesomely named.
Windows Phone 8 feature pack.
Yeah.
Or it's like a name from 1999.
The WP8FP.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is shipping in 2014, so who cares?
I was talking to a guy from Windows Phone yesterday. I said, why don't you just call it Service Pack 1A? You know,
or it's the like, plus what is pack.
Yeah,
the
plus I was like, so that's not 8.1?
No, it's not 8.1.
Why don't they just put it in 8.1? Like,
I know.
Oh, because we want it to come out sometime this century?
Mm-hmm.
No, well, so here's the weird thing. Windows Phone 8.1 supposedly early 2014, like Q1. So this could be timed just around the same time as that. And it'll be interesting to see if it's an add-on pack or if this is just them pre-announcing Windows Phone 8.1 without them saying that.
Yep. Based on the fact that the auto VPN in this feature pack is a feature of Windows 8.1 on PC mm-hmm. client, it suggests some sort of tie-in between the two. So
we'll see. The feature list is auto triggered VPN is going to be in this, the mail encryption through SMIME support, right? Mobile device management, certificate management, all things that enterprises are saying, hey, and if you until you add these to Windows Phone, I can't use it.
Okay,
that said, they're going to add this to Windows Phone and they're still not going to use it, so I don't.
Come on, be a half glass full guy.
I can't. It's like every release of Windows Phone, there's some enterprise features missing, and every release they add some, and it's never enough. And I just don't. I don't know. I guess we'll see. Yeah. But I would like them to roll Windows 8, Phone 8. I think it's great, but I don't know.
All right, let's talk about the Nokia 1020.
Mm-hmm.
41 megapixel camera, although, well, you guys were at the event, and mm-hmm. I saw they had an art gallery of big blow-ups of these images.
Yeah.
Were those 41 megapixel? See, the original PureView, the 808, rarely took it as a 41 megapixel picture. They were using the extra pixels for, you know, other things.
Yeah, they do the same thing here, but the 41 megapixel thing is kind of an added wrinkle, right? So every time you take a photo, there's an original quality picture, which is actually not 41 megapixels. I think I want to say it's 36, 38, depending on the aspect ratio of the photo.
Wow.
It's a lot. Yeah, it's a huge picture. And then it saves a second copy in 5 megapixels, which you use for sharing. And that 5 megapixel version is what they call oversampled, meaning that they look at each pixel. They look at 7 pixels on the original, and they pick the best one or however they do it, and they use that as one pixel on the final. The 5 megapixel version is the one that you would share if you shared it from your phone to Twitter or Facebook or whatever. So that makes sense. And the original though works as literally as an original. So you can go back to it at any time. You can edit it on the phone. You can zoom in, twist around. They have a really cool this new software built in where as you zoom in, you can also spin the picture in space. So if something isn't quite level or whatever, you want to level it out or just do that kind of angle thing because you want that effect, you can do that. And then you can save that as another picture. And so you could basically, the way they describe it is you use this thing as kind of a master to create new, they say new stories, which is kind of a cute way to do it, but you know, to keep create new photos.
It's computational photography is what it
is. Right. There's no optical zoom occurring here, right?
Right.
But because these things are such high resolution, the effect is very similar to having a very high optical zoom because you can zoom into this picture. And if it's, you know, obviously a classic example would you're on a skyscraper in New York City looking down at Central Park or something, and you can zoom in and actually the people look clear and they're, you know, even though they're tiny ant things in the original, you know, the one you're looking at originally, as you zoom in, they become very clear. And it's, It is a big ass camera, Leo. It is a big ass camera.
Is it? It's not a little phone.
No,
it looks like it's.
Actually, I should.
It's very flat, right? Like when
there's a little bulge where the camera is, though. Not
it's
so
actually
much
not
the
horrible. I was referring more to the optics. It is surprisingly light.
It is
for what it is. If you're used to a 920 or a 928, this thing
lighter
is much lighter.
Oh, good, because
it's crazy
heavy.
How light it is.
Those are heavy cameras.
What I said to the Nokia guy that I talked to was that this thing is so light it feels like an engineering sample where there are no electronics in it. That it's like there's air inside, you know. And the effect is very dramatic because I have, and certainly other people have dinged Nokia a lot for the 920 series of phones where they're very heavy, dense, you know, devices. And this is not that. It's much lighter than it looks.
Here's a 41 megapixel image from the phone from Nokia. And the detail is stunning.
It's astonishing, yeah.
So, but the question is, A, what are they going to put in, an 8-gigabyte hard drive in this thing? I mean,
yeah. No, so... at the show, they were talking about just having 32 gigabytes. It's curiously, there's no SD expansion on it. Although, and by the way, there have been a lot of complaints about that. It may be a speed issue. I'm not actually positive why they didn't just add the expansion. But people have been telling me today that there's a 64 gig version listed at the Microsoft store. And they hinted that there would be a 64 gig version for international markets as well. But, you know, we'll see. But it's just the 32 gigs of storage. It's got 2 gigabytes of RAM instead of one, which is the first... For Windows Phone, normally you wouldn't need that much RAM on any Windows Phone, but because of all the computational stuff they're doing as you spin those pictures in real time and you can edit them right on the phone, there's a lot of stuff going on there. But honestly, aside from the obvious camera stuff, and maybe we should talk a little bit more about that, I think the exciting thing for everyone who uses Windows Phone is that this amazing camera app that they've created, which I think is just called Pro Camera, will be brought to some of the other high-end Lumia phones. And it is amazing. And what it allows you to do is edit things like exposure and brightness and contrast and all stuff on the phone in real time before you take a photo. And it does it using these kind of concentric circles. You can have one on at a time or all of them on. And you can spin the circle, you can spin the dial on each one. And it changes in the viewfinder. So you can see how it's going to affect the picture. So if you know something about photography, you know exactly which things you want to do, and it's beautiful. If you don't know anything about photography, you can screw around with it and see what those changes will do, and then you'll learn how to, how to become a better photographer. It has guides so that if you're going too far in either direction on any of these settings, it will turn yellow and then red on the dial to let you know that this exposure setting is too low or too high or whatever it is for the scene. Kind of an amazing thing, and so... I think you were just talking about how you use your smartphone screen more than your other screens,
yeah,
right?
I live on it.
I was thinking at this event, because I write up these what I use articles from time to time, and I was thinking about the time that I spend on a phone. I wish there was a way to measure this, but it wouldn't shock me to discover, with the possible exception of audiobooks, because those are obviously lengthy things that occur over time, when I'm actually interacting with the phone, it would not surprise me to find out that I spend most of my time on a smartphone taking pictures.
Right.
I think that's
the case.
And that's why this camera, I think is, I can't, this camera, this phone is.
It really is a camera.
Is important in the sense that I don't think this is ever going to be their bestseller, but I think this technology comes down market to other phones over time. And, you know, people have sort of jokingly been saying, oh, it's a camera with a phone on it. It isn't. This thing is a smartphone. There is no doubt about it. It's a Lumia smartphone. It's not contorted in any way to support some gigantic hump on the back. I mean, that thing that sticks out of the back is surprisingly small in the sense that it doesn't rise out of the back a lot.
Okay.
Yeah. And they also said, you know, you can actually lay it lens side down on a table and because they've got Gorilla Glass over the lens, too.
Right.
So you can't really, like, just accidentally scratch it. You really have to try to scratch it.
Yeah.
Which is good.
And again, some of the pictures, this thing, I mean, it's just...
Yeah.
It is amazing.
You know, one of the things they announced that I really liked, because unlike Paul, I take very few pictures with my smartphone. I looked at my... This won't surprise anyone on this podcast, but I looked at my pictures. Almost all of them are pints of beer, on my phone.
By the way, I can verify that. I looked at her camera roll, and it is literally
my bear.
200 glasses of beer, and then there's a plant.
My bear.
Exactly.
And I think that's pretty much the whole thing.
It is. So for people like me who don't know how ISO settings and aperture settings affect things because you don't take a lot of pictures, they have this built-in tutorial on these new phones too that is really handy because it'll say, here's what aperture settings do. And they let you try it. Like, see, if you do this, this is what happens. And it's great.
That's really good.
It's awesome.
Educational. Yeah.
Very
educational. So, go ahead.
Just from using the phone, it's a phone. And right. So it's not like that PureView 808 or whatever it was called that came out last year was obviously some crazy
It was nutty.
Device. This is stupid. But this thing is literally just a Lumia smartphone. And so for those times when you're not taking pictures, you're holding it in your hand, that is lighter than the 920 that I use every single day. It is less awkward to hold that thing.
And video equally good? How does – they're showing video here.
Yeah.
Is it
– same thing. So a couple of things with video. It records in HD, of course. It has amazing settings for video, which, by the way, you can zoom while you're recording. You can make the changes live while you're recording. It's got the same kind of concentric circle setting. You know, the on-screen interface you can change on the fly. It records in stereo, and the audio is – now, again, it's not – I'm just basing this on what they told us and on the samples that we heard, but distortion-free audio. And so what you're probably not hearing in this video that you're playing now is she went to a loud concert in a small room.
Right.
Recorded the audio and is now listening to it.
It's a song.
It's crystal clear coming out of the phone.
I think they do this with multiple microphones that are capable of different sound pressure levels. That is something that, people do a lot of. If you ever go to a concert, it's all
so
you
people
see.
Who go to a concert with the concerts we'll see on YouTube 6 months from now are going to be amazing because of this device.
I would almost buy this just for the camera.
Well, by the way, that's exactly why.
Yeah, that's their pitch, I think.
I mean, everything else is pure Windows Phone 8. I mean, it's there's nothing wrong with it. I happen to think it's better than everything else. But, I mean, the rest of it is Windows Phone 8, and you get all the good stuff you get with Windows Phone 8. But obviously the big deal with the 1020 is the camera. And the camera is, it's amazing.
Yeah.
And they still do the wireless charging and all of that. Mm-hmm. Although it looks like you have to get a special
cover. That's a wireless charging now becomes an add-on feature that you pay separately for.
Right. So I asked them about that, and they do the same thing for the 925, which is otherwise their current kind of best phone. And they also do it for the 720, which is a phone we can't buy here in the U.S. The wireless charging plate is actually pretty thin and light, but the reason you leave it off of the device is because you're shooting to make that thing as thin and light as possible. And again, Nokia has been dinged a lot on the size and weight stuff. And so the people who want it can add it, and it doesn't really add a lot to the heft of the thing. But when you don't have it, it results in something that's just, super as thin and light as it can be. And so if you've ever held a 925 in your hand, it's pretty amazing how thin and beautiful that phone is compared to the 928 and the 920. And ditto for the 1020.
That's really interesting. Yeah.
Yeah, they made it a lot lighter.
It's still plastic.
Yeah. But solid. It's solid. It's like bored, solid piece of polycarbonate. Yeah.
And nicely matte colors, which were nice instead of the shiny.
They keep showing. I mean, in all the stuff, it's this horrible bumblebee yellow.
Yeah,
it's a nice yellow, black. I like the yellow.
You don't mind it?
Right. Well,
I don't mind the yellow.
I'm wearing yellow headphones.
No, that's right. You're yellow.
I like the yellow.
Did they not? It probably isn't germane, but did they say anything about the size of the sensor or?
Yeah, so I just put a photo up on my site about this. One of the meetings I had, they had a kind of a breakdown of the internals of the camera. You should put it up on the screen if you can. They had the camera. So the little camera sensor, that thing you see right there, the top of that is an ice cube. The lens, That thing is sitting on ball bearings, and it has an electronic motor that drives it in real time when you're actually using it. But you can touch it, and it's like touching an eyeball it gives a little bit, and you can feel it move around, and it's kind of creepy. But if you scroll down to the next
photo. That's the optical image stabilization network.
So this is the camera on the top for the 920. I'm sorry, for the 1020. The one on the bottom is for the 720, to give you an idea of how different they are.
A lot smaller part.
That camera on the bottom takes unbelievably beautiful photos. Yeah. It is easily the same quality of a 920 It is amazing. And I know that from personal experience, that the camera and the other thing is that much bigger.
Look at that.
I mean, it gives you an idea, the difference in the size of the, you know, the optics that are inside of it.
This is smart of Nokia. This is that was always been a little bit of a differentiator, their quality of their cameras. In fact, I have somewhere it's behind me one of these old Nokia phones. It was a video camera.
Mm-hmm. A video camera.
Remember the end? Was it the?
Here
it is. Let me go get it for you. And
this
and
it
so
must have started.
This was
some
a perfect
movie,
example. A phone secondary. It was primarily. This was primarily a camera and a video camera for that. This is the N93i. And in fact, if you hold it, it actually looks like
that's funny
a video camera. Yep. And so this is not new for Nokia to focus on this part of the business. There's the phone stuff. And these are even Zeiss lenses, as with the new one. It's nothing new. And then it's a regular flip phone, kind of. Isn't that funny?
It's actually not a horrible idea, you know, for that kind of phone.
Oh, this was...
It's funny.
Boy, I was so happy to get this, you know?
It has a lens cap.
It has a lens cap and it has a mirror.
This is
so that
awesome.
When you shoot people, or when you shoot yourself, I guess, you can see what you're doing.
That's incredible.
Isn't that funny? Incredible. I'm here and,
I know Scoble must have had one of those.
Oh, yeah. We all did. This was the thing. I think... who gave me this? I might have
probably Scoble.
No, it was this. It was. I think it was. I want to say Six Apart, so that I would use it. They had, which is defunct since, a blogging platform that focused on photos. And they said, "Here, you can have this because I had a very active blog on their platform. And if you take lots of pictures and put it in the blog, let me see what kind of card it takes. Anyway, so this is not new for Nokia. They're playing to their strength." And in a market where there's not much to differentiate phones, here's something that they do that better than anybody.
Yeah.
Takes an SD card. Oh, hey, there's an SD card in here. I should see what's
on. Is it
on
a full-sized SD card?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I wonder what's on here. It's a gigabyte.
Ooh. Nice.
I'm going to put this in my computer. I wonder if there's some memories left behind.
Yeah, it's like finding an old box of postcards.
It's a mini SD. I don't know if this will fit. What is it?
Now you're going to have to find an adapter. That's a weird size.
That's a weird size. Oh, well, maybe if I could charge this up, I could play it back. The Lumia 1020 sensor is a little smaller than the PureView. It's a 2/3. That's interesting.
Yeah. I wonder if that was just... I can't remember what they mentioned that.
Hey, are you sad about Microsoft pulling the plug on TechNet? It's not on this list, but what does that mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know. Well, we didn't have a show that week, right?
Yeah. We didn't get to talk about that.
Yeah. You know, once you get past the initial...
What does it mean?
Outrage.
They said they did it because of piracy, right?
So this was the cheapest way to get a bunch of copies.
Did they actually say that?
did they
really say that?
Very strongly implied that in their post and their comments to people.
Interesting.
I think it's fair to say that if you really are interested in evaluating software, that there are many avenues now for that. They have pre-built VMs you can run in Hyper-V on Windows and all that kind of stuff. And they run for whatever, 3 months or something.
But TechEd was a cheap way, cheaper than the big subscription.
Right.
MSDN. A lot cheaper. Yeah.
To get
the cheapest MSDN was like $6.99.
I had a TechEd subscription. I know you did, Paul.
Yeah, yeah. So I recommend it because TechNet. I recommended it, I guess. Because it is what it is. It made sense.
Right.
It is fair to say though that as the world is changing toward more online services and so forth.
Right.
That access to on-prem versions of Microsoft servers or even client software is just a lot less necessary than it used to be for what TechNet was about. Like a lot of people obviously would use TechNet to pirate software. And, you know, I can have 10 installs of Windows 8 and 5 installs of Office or whatever. And, you know, this software is, well, not Windows, but Office is obviously available very cheaply online through Office 365 Home Premium. The Microsoft servers are all available as online hosted services. You can spin up VMs on Azure very inexpensively.
Right. So you just don't
know the world's changing. Yeah, it's just I think it's fair to say.
And by the way, Windows is pretty cheap now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Some of the enterprise products aren't as cheap, but still, yeah. You know, their point, I think, is if you want to use it as an IT, I mean, TechNet was for IT pros, right? And they're saying if you want to be a dev, we still have MSDN, and it's it is more expensive, but yeah, sure. We have that.
I think it's fair, though. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, I was just going to say, if you're an IT pro, you use the other venues, like Paul's explaining.
You don't need it.
They have ActionPack. They have MSDN, which is
it's obsolete by the internet. Yeah. I think that's
there's petitions to reinstate it. There's tons of petitions online, and people are saying, "That's it, I'm done with Microsoft."
I just saw an ad on CNN getting people to sign a petition to abolish the IRS. I can't imagine a bigger waste of. If you even took 3 seconds to sign the petition, that is a total waste of three seconds.
It's a good way to get on a list to be audited next year, I can tell you that.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah.
Maybe this is. Maybe the IRS is paying for that ad. I don't know. Yeah. But it just... petition doesn't mean anything.
It doesn't.
Yeah, you could petition all you want.
Exactly. Nope. Not going to happen, guys. All the ones who are hoping. Nope.
Apple loses twice in court. We finally get back to that story.
Well, I mean, you know, obviously they, I just go through this quickly. I mean, there was a Microsoft got involved in the App Store part of it, because Microsoft was arguing a couple of years ago that Apple can't own a trademark on this because App Store is.
Oh yeah. This is the Amazon one.
So Apple had, when Amazon announced their App Store, which they called App Store, for Android, Apple sued because they said we own the name for this. And now they're saying,
they didn't even go to trial. They just kind of said, you know, maybe that was a bad idea. I think you can credit Tim Cook. I think that was a Steve Jobs era.
Yep.
And Tim Cook said, come on.
Steve Jobs had that kind of Bill Gates style belligerence.
Right.
Tim Cook is obviously a very calm guy.
We got better things to do than
sue. Yeah. Now, the big one, though, is this antitrust thing. So Apple... was accused of and found guilty of not just conspiring with book publishers, but instigating the conspiracy that would harm consumers by raising the price of ebooks from $9.99 to up to $14.99. The interesting thing about this is that all of the booksellers involved settled with the United States previously. Similar suit in Europe, all of the publishers and Apple settled with the EU. They did not go to court. But here in the United States, for some reason, they went to court. And, you know, the judge didn't like what she saw there. So, anyway, they were found guilty. It's nice to see someone other than Microsoft in an antitrust case. But, you know, you look at the evidence and it's pretty clear what happened there. So,
there were some smoking emails.
Yeah.
Now, we should talk about this NSA thing.
That
Skype has had a backdoor to the NSA for ages, that Microsoft
is that the clicking that's on the line?
Hello?
Hello? Is that the NSA?
Hello? General?
Could you guys
speak
up, please?
You know, they can just watch the live stream unencrypted.
Yeah. They want to learn all about Windows.
Just like everybody.
Sure.
Yeah.
And then the other, really, Snowden said that Microsoft's been cooperating with the feds for years. And we actually talked about this several times when they bought Skype. We've talked about it in the past. There was that silly rumor that there was a key for the NSA. It was called NSA key in Windows, which was bogus. Microsoft denies this.
Yep. They do. They deny the whole thing pretty much. They just say, we're doing what everybody else has to do, which is we have to cooperate if they ask us for data. We have to.
The question is the degree of cooperation.
Right. And, you know, what we don't know is we haven't seen the real slides that indicate this. We don't know really what they say. We just know what The Guardian says they say.
Right.
Right. And so Microsoft's saying, you know, they're saying we do this, this, and this. And I can tell you, we only do it when they tell us we have to. And that's pretty much the story. It's he said, she said pretty much to me.
Yeah.
I'm not saying I believe Microsoft. I'm not saying I believe the interpretation of these slides or even the slides themselves. I'm just saying we don't really know, right?
This is the quote from the release. To be clear, Microsoft does not provide any government with blanket or direct access to SkyDrive, Outlook.com, Skype, or any Microsoft product.
Yep.
So it has to be by request, specific information.
I believe it.
Yeah, I believe they all do it.
I've been sort of amazed. The NSA thing is like, so the spying agency spies, shocker. The companies that are required by law to comply are complying, also a shocker. I mean, I get the sort of outrage over the NSA stuff, but every time the NSA comes up, this shock occurs. It's like we forget about it for a couple of years, and then there's another NSA story, and we get all, you know, freaked out about it again. I mean, this is in the same way that we have, physical constraints on our borders to protect ourselves from terrorism or attacks from the outside or whatever. We have electronic protections as well. I mean, I'm obviously there needs to be someone watching the watchers, being the classic line that one would use for something like the NSA. But I don't know. I do.
You know, there's a fairly important line in here. There are aspects of this debate that we wish we were able to discuss more freely.
Yes. This is the transparency thing. So
they're saying, we can't really give you the information you're asking for. They do imply that we may in some circumstances, our legal obligations may in some circumstances require that we maintain the ability to provide information in response to a law enforcement or national security request. That tells me that they have the ability to decrypt Skype calls. Whether the feds do it all the time or not, they have the ability. They've built it in because they were under legal obligation. They had to do it. It says finally, when we upgrade or update products. So I think that's an acknowledgement. Yeah, well, we put a backdoor in Skype so that when we get a wiretap request, we can give it to them.
I bet the same thing's in Google Hangout, right?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. And the only reason it's worth saying is just to remind people it's not private. Yeah,
exactly. And if anybody still thinks at this point that your conversations over Skype or Google Hangouts are private, I don't know what to say.
Yeah.
Wait, this isn't private?
It's not.
Scott McNeely was right.
He was.
No, and there are ways to do it. There's secure ways to have conversations like this if you want.
Yeah.
But Skype would not be it. And I would submit that no product provided by a major U.S. corporation is likely to be that.
Nope.
And BlackBerry just gave India all the keys. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, this is not a surprise, as you say. Disappointing, sad.
This is the world we live in,
Hey, let's talk about audible.com, and then we're going to get your picks of the week, if you do not mind. Lady and gentleman, Paul Thurrott, Mary Jo Foley, we're talking about Windows and Microsoft, and Paul and I are big Audible listeners. You know, we love the Audible app on Windows Phone, on Windows 8 Metro. I just got an update on Android. If you use Android, they've updated the app now to be kind of match the beautiful app, the stuff they've done on the other platforms. Audible is a bookstore of 100,000 plus titles. I haven't counted. I bet you it's a lot more than that now. I haven't counted lately. AUDIBLE.com. In fact, if you go to audible.com/windows, you can get your first book free. The real challenge with Audible is picking that first book. There's so many in every category. Did you see they just added the great courses? I'm so excited about that.
That was my pick.
Go ahead. Tell us about it. Do you listen to these? Because I do. And I actually have been paying a lot of money for these. And to be able to get them on Audible now makes me super happy.
So I'm currently listening to the new Stephen King book at the moment, but I actually do have waiting in the queue one of these great courses, I guess. Not surprisingly, it's a History of Hitler's Empire, second edition.
Oh, you love that stuff, don't you?
Yeah, I went through this. You know, I think they're advertising the great courses right now. I got like a little notification about it in the app, so I was kind of going through and listening to some of the stuff they have. I think the cool thing about this for me is that, obviously, there's iTunes U type content if you're on an iOS device, but I'm not. And this is kind of a neat way to get some really high quality. In my case, history is the one big one I'd be interested in. But there's all kinds of different.
Well, these are college lecturers. And this is another company called The Great Courses, and I've bought many of these from them.
This is new to Audible, though, right?
These guys are the best college lecturers. The one that I really loved was How to Listen to Music By Robert Greenberg. He's kind of got a funny style of speaking, but he's really good. So they look for the best professors in a subject. And so they're like college courses. The how to listen to and understand great music, which I would highly recommend. If you know this gave me an understanding and appreciation of classical music that I just didn't have before. It's long. I mean, it's 36 hours. It's a full college course.
That was my other question. So the ones I've looked at have all been like several hours long.
Yeah, you can have individual lectures.
So some of them are, okay, right, this one's 30s. Yeah,
so if you want the rise and fall of the British Empire, for instance, you know, you're going to be 18 hours because it went quickly.
I can't take 18 hours of that, but.
The American Mind, this is Professor Alan Guezzo from the Great Courses Intellectual History series. So this is an excerpt from the series. So these are really, really well done. I highly recommend them. But they're college lectures. They're not like somebody reading you a book.
Right.
So it might not be for all.
But I like this kind of thing.
Are trying to fill our minds with something.
I'm literally trying to fill my mind with something.
Yeah, that's true. Instead of stuffing. If you want to read, if you want a book that will come to life as if you're in a movie, there's plenty of those too. Thrillers, mysteries, you know, Dan Brown's series. There's also, I mix it up because I, you know, if you look at my Audible library and there's, it's like 500 or 600 books in there now. I mix it up all over the place. There's The Great Gatsby, Pride and Prejudice. Yep. But then I'm reading The Descendants and Silver Lining Playbook because I like movies and I like to read the book from the movie. Reading science fiction. Audible's great. Here's your chance to get your first book free. Audible.com/windows. You'll be signing up for the gold account. That's the book a month account. And yes, that can include the great courses. And one a month, believe me, is probably enough. But the first 30 days are free. You cancel any time in the first 30 days. That book is yours to keep. You'll pay nothing. But I think you want to stick around. Audible.com/windows. The best way to fill your mind with great stuff. After listening to Windows Weekly. Please, I beg of you. Audible.com/windows. Paul Thurrott, your tip of the week.
So a couple of years ago, a guy named Bob Tabor made a great video series about developing for Windows Phone 7. And I didn't go through the whole thing. I went through a lot of it. And he's got a kind of a great style. And he's back now with a Windows Phone 8 development for absolute beginners. It's 35 episodes. I think it's over 11 hours of content. And it is... I just think this guy's amazing and does a great, great job and a great gift for anyone who wants to learn how to develop. And actually, if you don't know how to program, because this is aimed at developers, he also has a series on, I think it's called C# Fundamentals.
Oh, wow.
And so if you don't know the language, there's a multi-part series on just learning the language behind.
And this is free. This is from Channel 9.
Yep.
Wow.
Yep. Yeah, it's really an amazing resource and just updated for Windows Phone 8. So. A great, great way to get started developing software. Just to learn software development, it would be great. Even if you didn't really care about Windows Phone one way or the other, great way to go.
And when you go to Paul's site to get that link, don't forget, look next door to IT Dev Connections, because the early bird rate ends next Thursday. Paul and Mary Jo will be there lecturing, and we'll be doing a live Windows Weekly from there, too. And we'll make sure you can attend that. You'll have to get us a big room, Paul.
Yep.
Can you arrange that? Get a big room?
I can.
All right. Yeah. That would be fun. I'd like to do that.
Yeah. I didn't think we would ever. I figured you'd do it remotely, but if you're not around,
it's a live host. Could,
Yeah. That'd be great.
We'll fly Tom out or Iaz.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
Your software pick of the week.
So this week, Nokia announced what they're going to be doing with their Here location and mapping apps on Windows Phone. And some months ago, I think maybe back in February, they announced how they were going to bring these apps to other phones, right? So obviously, if you have a Nokia device, like a Lumia phone, you get most of these apps for free. And but there were Plus version, you know, it's like a Drive Plus version, which is a kind of the superior version of their navigation app. And Most Lumia users get that, but those that don't can now buy it and upgrade to the full version. So instead of just getting navigation for your country, you can get worldwide navigation. And so I'm not positive these updates are out yet. I think they were set to be delivered, and they discovered an installation issue, and they got pulled back. And so they should be out any time now. But basically what this consists of is Here Maps, which is the replacement for Bing Maps in Windows Phone. Everyone with Windows Phone 8 can get this app for free. And obviously, if you have a Lumia, it probably just comes on there right in the box. There's a Here Transit app, which has just got a major update. This is an amazing thing for people who commute or people who need to take public transportation of any time, of any kind, rather. Also comes on all Nokia devices for free, but people who have other Windows Phone 8 handsets can buy it now for, I think, about $1.99. They have their prices in euros, but I believe it's going to be about the same in the U.S. And then the navigation apps, which are Drive and Drive Plus. So Drive is the version that is just for your country or the country of the SIM in your phone when you install it. Drive Plus is worldwide navigation with downloadable maps, you know, for offline use and all that kind of stuff. So some of the – it's weird. It's kind of a weird collection of phones. But the mid-level Lumias like 520, 521, and 720 get the Drive version, and then they can upgrade to the Drive Plus. And then most Lumia users get the Drive Plus one for free. But – anyone can upgrade to it. So it's actually pretty expensive. Like if you don't have a Lumia device, it's about $35 to upgrade. But this is a fantastic navigation app. And these apps also kind of work together. So as you do things like you can set your home location and favorite destinations, and those things come across each of the apps because they're saved up to Here cloud service. And so whether you're in Maps, Transit, Drive, or City Lens, which is another Here app, those locations are all in all of the apps. And so you can go in and out as you need to perform the different functions. So I haven't checked yet this afternoon, but the last time I checked, they weren't quite out yet, but they should be out any moment now. So these things are coming very soon.
Very cool. I immediately downloaded those. If I have already got them on the phone, it'll update, right?
Yeah, I've noticed with the Here apps, I don't know how common this is on Windows Phone, but it actually pays to go into the store and search. Oh. Because if you go to the page in the store and you need to update, it will actually say update, even though you haven't gotten an update notification.
Got it.
So it may be worth, looking at it. I'm going to look at it right now and see if they're out yet.
Mary Jo Foley has our Enterprise Pick of the Week while Paul's looking at that.
Yep. The Enterprise Pick of the Week is a new service that Microsoft announced at the partner conference this week called Power BI. For Office 365.
Is that Power so Biatch?
I literally, I swear to God, I was just thinking exactly the same thing.
No.
BI star, star, star.
Was biting my tongue not to say that.
B-I, you see, I have no filter. Business intelligence.
Business intelligence, guys. Come on.
Okay.
So you know how right now, if you're in a company and you want a report generated, like say, which territory had the most sales this quarter? You have to go to your IT department and say, can you do this report for me? And then they send you back at some time, who knows when, some nice charts and graphs. So this idea, the idea with Power BI is you, the average user, are going to be able to type in natural language query style, hey, who had the biggest sales this quarter? And automatically the system will come back and generate the charts for you. So you don't have to have the IT department as a bottleneck. And so this service is going to be an add-on to Office 365. I think Plan E is going to get it first, which is the enterprise plan. If you don't have Office 365, there's going to be a dedicated SKU that you can buy for Office 365. And right now you can't yet get this. It's not even in preview, but it's coming to preview this summer. If you go on Microsoft's Office blog, you can sign up now to get into the preview and try it out for free. And one other cool thing is they're going to have native apps for Windows 8, Windows RT, and the iPad that are going to hook into this. So wherever you are on the road, even if you're using your iPad, you'll be able to generate these queries and get back results through Power BI.
Very good. Power Business Intelligence.
Yes, that's what it is, BI.
Despite the fact that Paul and I's minds are really pretty much at the age of 16.
Yeah.
Your code name pick of the week?
Also related to that enterprise pick is my code name pick. And there used to be this thing called GeoFlow. That was the code name at Microsoft. And now they've given it its real name, which is way less cool. It's Power Maps. So GeoFlow becomes PowerMaps. PowerMaps are a 3D visualization tool for mapping. So when you're using Power BI and you want to generate something that that connects up the mapping data with your BI query, this is what will be generating it. And it's going to be available to people who have the Office 2013 version of Excel, but they also are probably going to have some backported version of it so that if you have, say, Excel 2010, you can use PowerMap as well. So that's they're using all these uncool names for all these cool code names they had. There's Power View, Power Map, Power Query, and Power Pivot. Those are all the add-ons to Excel.
That's the Microsoft we know and love.
That's the Microsoft.
Now we're talking. That's what we want. More power.
I think somewhere I've got that. We've got the power. I should play that. We've got the power. Finally, is it beer time?
It is.
It's time for a beer. Because
waiting on beer.
It's Friday, 4:20. You can do whatever you want, but beer would be good for me.
It would. Beer pick of the week is from Houston. A brewery in Houston called Carbach, K-A-R-B-A-C-H, Carbach, I think. And the beer pick was something Paul would hate because it's super hoppy. It's called Hop Delusion. 100 IBUs, very, very, very hoppy. I got to drink it when I was at the partner conference, and there was a really cool bar near the partner conference. If you're ever in Houston, go to the Flying Saucer. Really awesome. They had 80 taps, 80 craft taps.
Wow.
I only drank maybe 8 out of
40
the 80.
40 out of the 80.
But yeah, it's very good, and it was fun to get some to try some local beers from Houston while at the partner show.
Awesome. Well, that wraps it up for this Friday edition, this unusual Friday edition of Windows Weekly. Don't forget, you can get your tickets to Connections at Paul's site, Supersite for Window, and we'll be doing that September or October, right? It's a few months hence.
Yeah, I guess October, early October.
Early October. We do Windows Weekly normally Thursdays, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 1900 UTC. And if you watch live, you can be in the chat room. But if you don't, you can't. So you could get it down. You can then download. Well, you could be in the chat room, but nobody else will be. You can download. You can download a copy just by going to twit.tv/ww, twit.tv/ww, or wherever finer podcasts are aggregated and stored. I can do a power montage. I don't have the. I've got the power.
I'm powerful hungry.
Scotty, give me that power.
Power on.
Power off. It doesn't say anything. It just sounds that way.
Unquestionably, an immensely powerful field of energy is being generated around here somewhere.
I got every power sound effect, except we got the power. Paul Thurrott is at the Supersite for Windows, winsupersite.com. That's where you'll catch him. And also his books. And the latest is the Windows Phone Book, which is online at windowsphonebook.com. Right?
It's true. It's almost done.
It's not a lie. I wouldn't make that up. Also, Mary Jo Foley is at allaboutmicrosoft.com. That's where you'll find her. Or at your local craft brew pub. It was nice to see you both. It's been, you know, I wasn't here last. None of us were here last week because it was the 4th of July. And then I wasn't here for the build event. I'm sorry I missed that. Was it fun? Did you have a good time?
Yeah, that was really fun.
Good. But I saw you the next day.
So long ago, Leo.
Seems a long time.
You know, it really does.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was good.
And I guess Alex took you for a ride in his plane?
He did.
We are lucky to still have a podcast, Leo.
I can't believe that he... First of all, I can't believe he has a license. But then I can't believe that you agreed to go. So this is... Leo, what kind of plane is it, Alex?
Alex is like James Bond.
It's a Cessna 172. He is. He's a secret agent.
He has stuff going on that we don't know about.
Oh, I know that I don't know. I know what I don't know. There's things you know.
All we could think was, like, this plane goes down and this podcast is toast.
What did you get? Where'd you go? Did you leave from the Petaluma Airport?
Yeah.
Out to the coast?
Yeah, we flew around the area. We flew out to the coast.
Oh, how fun.
Was it the Russian River right there? Yeah.
There's a lot to see there. Did you plow into any hot air balloons? Because that's always fun.
I asked him if I could strafe something, but he actually took it very seriously.
No, we call him Red Baron. Red Baron Gumpel.
What fun. Well, I'm sorry I missed you guys. I'm glad you had a good time. Thank you, Alex, for taking good care of Paul and Mary Jo. And we'll see you next week on Windows Weekly.
You know, I was once in the room with Whitey Bulger.
Really?
Yeah. In fact, my dad
wrote a book that
describes
the scene.
Was
that at the big house?
No, we were in, there's no nice way to say this. There's a little shithole in Denham called the Midway, which is one of those places you kind of end up at, not go to. But
yeah,
I think we had just moved to Denham and my dad didn't know any better. So he took us in there during the day to eat. And
oh, geez.
There's no one in this restaurant except for four guys, two of which were gangster-looking guys, the other two which were guys in suits,
oh,
one of whom was a guy informant, and they were yelling at each other. And,
My God.
So we're in the room with the little kids. Like, I must have been 6, 7 years old, and my dad actually was walking over to the table to tell these guys, you know, could you keep it down, because he just kept swearing and swearing.
Oh, my God.
And the informant guy, I'm sorry, the guy who just testified in the trial, the guy who killed everybody, Bulger, got up, stormed past my father, knocked him on his ass.
What?
And ran outside. And my dad was sort of like, okay, so this guy just went through me like I was butter, so maybe I should leave them alone. But it was Whitey Bulger and the guy they called the hitman or whatever, yelling at the FBI. And anyway, it's in a book. My dad just brought up this book and he's like, page whatever, 289.
It's in the book?
This is us. He's like, this happened to us. Yeah.
How old were you?
Well, we just moved to that. I was 6, 7 years old.
Do you remember it?
Oh, no.
Wow. What a story.
Yeah, weird. Yeah, really strange.
That's amazing. I'm kind of blown away. Holy cow.
Yeah.
So I had dinner with Dan Lyons a couple of nights ago, and I said, because Dan has the strongest accent you ever heard. And I said, you know, because people in the chat room are saying, oh, no, I don't like the show because the accents are phony. And I said, Ray Donovan. And he said, no. He said, Liev's got it nailed. John Voight's got it nailed.
It
he
is said, a tough one. The
Ginger,
Boston accent.
Ginger doesn't have it very quite
the,
right.
The most awful Boston accent of all time was Julianne Moore on 30 Rock.
Yes.
Have you seen
it? Yes.
It's so awful.
But it was supposed to be. It was comedically bad.
I hope so, because it was
bad. Yeah. No, that was – I took that as pure comedy.
I hope so, because that was just
It
awful.
Was so horrible. Oh, no. She was flattening and broadening well
it's
beyond.
It's better just not to do an accent, which, frankly, is
I think that was the comedy of it. I don't think she was trying to do an authentic Boston accent.
That's good to know. I still feel burned by that.
All right. We can start the show there. every once in a while, it's great, folks. If you listen, every once in a while, by accident, Paul will lapse into Southie.
Oh, you should. My kids like call this out now.
Yeah.
I once. What did I say? I said something with betta.
Yeah.
And my daughter was like, "I'm sorry, Dad. What was that again? It's what
betta."
The best one though is my mother. You know, because we all grew up here. So when my son was little, my daughter asked why Graham, my mother, calls Mark Mock.
Mock. Mock.
Like, why does Graham call Mark Mock?
Mock.